I'm Gab, he's Jules, Blue Sky, sort of, over West London. Jules, we have our Elite Eight in the Champions League.
Final Eight.
I know there's some grumpazoids out there who go and complain and said, oh, this round was boring. All I'm saying is, I know who you are.
Yeah.
And next time, watch the freaking game, right?
We certainly disagree.
We certainly disagree with that view. Six of the eight games really came down to the wire. Yeah. So, whatever. If you don't like it, maybe you don't like football. Anyway, I let you go. Inter. We got to lead with this because if you had to count an upset, this was an upset. And I kind of felt like I was watching a movie where you know how the script, and the script is all written up in a certain way.
Yeah, the ending.
There's so many stereotypes
assigned
to these two teams, stereotypes that were earned in their history. I don't think they've been following the stereotypes of the last couple of years, but the one about Atleti and their fans and the Civitas Metropolitano effect, this held true.
Yeah, it is. And I think even Simone Inzaghi said in his pretty much press conference saying they transform themselves at home, which is true. You see the record at home and away in the league, for example. This was Diego Simeone's 50th Champions League match at home, whether it's at the Calderon or at the Civitas Metropolitano, and he's only lost five times before and still five times. Only Pep and Jose they've done the same. So this is the best home record ever in for the amount of games.
I think it's fair to say Pep and Jose probably for the most of it would have had much better
Well. So you're right, at home it's a very different story. I think we need to start also by just reminding everyone that in the first leg, that's where Inter, they should have won that first leg 3-0, and then the tie would have been over by far. The fact that you only won 1-0 in Milan, you kind of left them alive, and it came back to haunt you, although Inter also had the chances to win that game and go through.
Yeah, I never like it. I never like bringing sort of psychology into it because I kind of think, oh, here's something I can't explain. Oh, yes, it must be psychology. However, I think in this case, to some degree, that goal, so Inter score after 32 minutes.
Yeah, great team goal.
Really, really nice goal, Fede Di Marco. And then 3 minutes later, they give up a goal in the silliest way. And I think in many ways, unlucky way, right? We can say Benjamin Pavard, I don't know, completely whiffs on what should have
really
been a
strangely,
pretty basic clearance, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to go down the agent Benjamin group here. It's not so much that he whiffs, but then the ball bounces off of Bastoni right into the path of Antoine Griezmann. Now, Griezmann's a phenomenal footballer, but he's not Nostradamus. He doesn't predict the future, right? So everything falls into place. And all of a sudden, if you're into it, you're like, all right, we did this. Plan's working. I thought they played really well at the game at the beginning.
Yeah.
We got this. And then something unforeseen happens, and it's 1-1. And I thought that's when Inter really deflated. And that's when the momentum really shifted to Atletico Madrid.
Yeah, because the second half, which I think was in a way helped, and the coaching was very different. We know, we've said many times, that Inzaghi everything is very structured and likes to make his substitutions at the hour mark often, or at the time, this time he waited a bit longer. I'm not really sure what he tried to do, bringing on defenders and wing backs and things like that, and waiting a long time to bring Fratesi, and then bring on David Klaassen, of all people.
Well, David Klaassen was on to take penalties.
We saw what happened.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have much preferred Aslani to come in, then at least he would have had a bit more match fitness. Anyway,
I love your secret vendetta against everything Dutch.
Maybe I do. Great hair though, David Klaassen. Great new hair, but that second half showed you that even if Thuram has a great chance to score, Barella has another chance, but at least Thuram is a striker, should have done much better. Yeah. Then there was more and more pressure, and Memphis turned the tie on.
Yeah, Memphis was huge, as you know. I am a Memphisolic. Yeah. And in some ways it hurts a little less when it's Memphis who does it to you. I know that was a huge substitution, which we'll get to, from Simeone to put on Memphis for Alvaro Morata. But I have to say, those two chances, all right, the Barella chance, the guy sprints for 80 meters, whatever,
he
doesn't
get
a good shot off,
yeah,
but he should have done better. The Thuram one, I'm like, dude, you're a professional athlete. It's like he strolls into the box. He has all the time in the world. It looked to me like he could sit there and meditate before finishing. He looked so comfortable. I said, like, this guy is so cool. He will definitely score. And then he doesn't.
And I mean, what in a way...
That's hard.
The three players that kind of let you down, the Barella on the chance, Thuram on the chance missing, and Lautaro missing his penalty, are the three maybe most reliable players you've had this season.
Yes.
Your three leaders in a way. So that was disappointing as well.
All right, Jules, let's get in there. Simeone's had so many ups and downs this season. He's had a very recent disappointment as well, the way they had their backside handed them by Athletic Bilbao. Well, Cadiz too, although Cadiz... Or whatever, maybe you want to laugh it off. We were focused on the Champions League. But you shouldn't be, because Bilbao are just 2 points behind.
Yeah.
To have it all come together in this game, I think says that, you know, he's still El Cholo, right? The players are still motivated. They still listen. He can still come up with a game plan. We know he's going to have the crowd and everything. That's a big thing. But look, it's not like Inter have never played before, hostile crowds before. What impressed me, though, was the personality he showed with his changes. And I specifically go to the Morata one. Morata was really struggling in this game. He was not having an impact.
Yeah.
But the thing about Morata, and I know people are going to giggle, Morata missing all his goals, paha. The thing about Morata is he may not be Kai Havertz in terms of being the pressing machine, as you call him, but he's big and he's fast. And against that back three, having that physicality and directness, that could really, really be a factor, especially if Inter were going to have more success keeping the ball in their possession. I assume Memphis or Correa were going to come on because they needed a goal, maybe even both. Eventually, they both came on.
Yeah.
And obviously, I knew Griezmann, despite the fact, after missing four games, he ended up playing 100 minutes. I knew Griezmann, he was going to keep Griezmann out there as long as he could.
3 weeks without playing is just a machine.
But I did not think he was going to take Morata out. I thought he was going to do something weird with you know, maybe move Griezmann back or whatever.
Yeah, I think, I guess...
That's a really, really big call, because this is a guy who's carried you, you know, this season.
Yeah, but Memphis has been also a very good super sub for them. You know, replacing Griezmann when he was out injured, scoring, coming off the bench, scoring, having an impact with the pace, the physicality, the technical ability. He scored, he hit the post, he scored his penalty as well, and I think for that he's also very reliable. He was really the difference-making, when on the other hand, for example, Inzaghi tried Alexis Sanchez, and who came on for Thuram, you would think also for the penalty shoot, with the penalty shooter in mind, a bit like Klassen. And yet, there's not much from Alexis in the game, and then he misses the pen with a terrible pen, really, for someone so experienced who won Copa Americas on penalties, taking the last one, all of that. That was really disappointing. But I think it's pretty incredible still what a Griezmann can bring you, I think, in a game like that where you needed him so badly. What a defensive structure with Savage, Witzel, which is not, come on, and Hermoso. This is not Beckenbauer, Baresi, and Maldini together, you know. And yet, against a team like Inter, with that pedigree and that attacking threat, defend well for most of the game, especially in the second half, it's remarkable. And you don't know what to expect with this Atletico team, really, because we've seen them good this season, beating Real Madrid, and then terrible, especially away from home. For example, they lost to Cadiz, we said that, who hadn't won since September. And then 3 days later, they beat Inter, who hadn't lost since September, which is really crazy. But this is them. And that's why I would not want to draw them, because they're so unpredictable in many ways, even when they play, that you just don't know what really you're going to face.
Yeah, no. And again, if we think of the ingredients that they often talk about this in knockouts, a shutdown keeper is big. And obviously, Oblak, arguably the best goalkeeper, you know, left among the eight left in the Champions League, at least until Courtois returns, right? Unless I'm forgetting somebody.
Neuer, if you're a Neuer fan, Manuel Neuer.
Manuel Neuer now, yeah, maybe. I mean, Neuer a few years ago, sure, but that's kind of where you are. You've got that, and you have the individual match winners, right? Both, maybe less so on set pieces than before, but in Griezmann. Potentially even somebody like Correa Riquelme, who come on and turn it into a one-on-one. And they've got the energy and they run at you. I think this is what Inzaghi tried to prepare against. I think he went deep too soon.
The Memphis goal really must be disappointing to concede, because there's so much space for Koke on the edge of the Inter box. And then he still finds this pass when they have the back five, all that. For Memphis to even turn into the box and finish like that, I'm like, what are you doing?
I think Frattesi in terms of the managing the game and not getting sucked too deep, I think the Frantesi substitution is the one where you can, where Simone Inzaghi would really want to have this one back. Because if you put Frattesi on sooner, you've got a guy who runs all day.
Yeah.
And then you have the energy to not get stuck back, right? When you go on the counter, you can actually keep the ball. And you can actually maybe even counter-press a little bit and try to disrupt their possession. But he came on so late that I think, you know, the ship had pretty much sailed at that point. I want to give a shout-out to Axel Witsel as well, who gets a ton of... You know, stake, oh, he's so slow, blah, blah, blah. Okay, yeah, fine. Put him in the middle with guys either side of him. And I thought he showed a lot of leadership here. And another word, Lautaro, because obviously he's been monumental this season.
Yeah.
But in the end, not just the penalty miss. And of course, immediately after the penalty miss, I get a text from, you know, Mark Ogden saying, ha ha, I told you Lautaro was rubbish, you know, like, I mean, whatever. But to be fair, this is a big game. This is your big player who's about to renew his contract. And the header especially, because he's a really good header of the ball, despite not being the biggest, that was disappointing. You know, did a good job on the first goal to set it up.
His link of play I thought was good. But
he went missing.
Yeah, a little bit. And there's a moment, I don't know if you remember, in the first half or second half where Mkhitaryan break through the 3v3. And Lautaro is on his left in a really good position. And instead, he tried to find Thuram on the right, which was definitely the wrong call. It was just one of those really frustrating nights, I think, for Inter in general, because at times they moved the ball really well. And at other times, all that intensity from Atletico and they were very narrow at times just caused them a lot of problems. It's really, do you think... So I looked it up yesterday. Inter never played in extra time in Champions League era, and only once... before in European Cup era, and Atleti under Simeone with Oblak in goal in 72 was the last time that the only time where Inter play actually an extra time. Do you think for players of this caliber, counts?
I don't think this makes much of a difference. I think so many of them, you know, the ones who are more experienced, they've all been there, down that, and done that. You know, you mentioned Alexis Sanchez before. I mean, he played in. I think it was the year that they won the Copa America, where like every single game went to penalties in the end. You know, Inter hadn't. You know, I these are fun stats. Like, Inter haven't been involved in a penalty shootout.
So no, but in terms of experience, 1996 managing
UEFA Cup final, which they lost to Schalke, I think, if I remember correctly. Thank you, Roy. But so what, right? I think there may be more in the fact that, and I made this point before, I don't think Inter have been challenged by big clubs as often as Atletico Madrid have this season. Partly because they've been so dominant in the league, they weren't great in the knockout in the group stage. Mm-hmm. Probably should have won their group, didn't. But you know, they were outplayed by Real Sociedad. So these might be little clues after the fact where you can say, are they as battle tested as they should have been? But you know what? They're battle tested from last season. Most of those guys were there last year. And so, I don't know. I mean, what do you think they do the rest of the season now at this stage?
This is over now.
Right. Yeah. Just enjoy the title.
Yeah.
Try new things.
It's a long celebration for the title.
Long celebration. I want to see Bisek. I want to see Aslani. I want to see all the kids out there. I want to find out what you have. I don't need to see, you know, Çalhanoğlu, Mkhitaryan, if they want to preserve themselves,
I'm with you,
for what's next. And look, it might suck as a fan. Oh, look, I want to see the stars, but surely this is what you do, right?
Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's a big disappointment. You and I saw them going far. We thought they were better than last season, even with the players that they lost. But it looked so good, and maybe too good. Maybe the way they tried to manage at some point the lead, even at 1-1. Like you said, rightly, going deeper and deeper and deeper, which is not really their style. This is not how they play. Okay, against Bologna at the weekend, they controlled that second half, but they conceded 23 goals against Atletico. They conceded 19.
Shots. It felt like 23 goals. Sorry. It was 23 shots.
23 shots, 19 against Bologna at the weekend. So I think there's a point where you might want to control and say it's okay.
Yeah, let's defend higher the pitch.
That's a lot.
We're going to ask about Atleti, but before that, I'm Marcus Thuram. Marcus Thuram, obviously, is one of those footballers who grew up who's not a working class footballer. He grew up because his dad is the legendary Julian Thuram. And so we have certain stereotypes associated with, you know, people who grew up with a lot of privilege. He did not grow up in the streets, whatever. That incident with Savage, where he grabbed Savage's package. Which, I had told you, oh, this happened between Atleti and Inter, you instantly assume it was the other way around. It was an Atletico guy. In fact, it might even be Diego Simeone doing it to Simone Inzaghi.
Yeah. Right?
Instead, you have the rich kid doing it to the Atletico player. I was wondering if you have any take on this. Is this part of his... Is this not a side of his personality I've seen before?
Definitely
is it
not.
A case of guy saying, like, you know, maybe there's some back talk saying, like, all right, you know, rich kid, like, pretty boy... Like, you're just here because of your dad.
Know,
And then, so he shows them, like, I can be just as street as you are.
I don't know, because then after that, they were laughing with each other to the point that I wondered if they knew each other from somewhere, which I don't think they might do. I don't know.
But Savage has been around a long time.
Yeah, but not from my knowledge.
Right.
And I've never seen Marcus.
I think Savage enjoyed it. Who knows?
No,
where
I don't
are we
know.
To judge?
But obviously, we know the Valderrama, Mitchell. We know the Vinnie Jones and the Gaza, like, stuff like that. But I was very, very surprised. I don't know if he can get into trouble. Could you get? You can't get into trouble, right? You can't for doing that. And
I don't believe so. No.
We like a suspension. I don't know, something. But it was very unlike him. I'm not sure. I really understood exactly what happened and why just before he came off as well. But that's another side of Marcus Thuram that you didn't know.
I think they have a huge game coming up against Barcelona this weekend.
Yeah.
If they screw this up and Bilbao win, they're out of the top four. Doesn't look like Spain will get the five Champions League places next year. It sounds perverse. Obviously, they can get to the Champions League next year by winning the Champions League.
Yeah.
In a weird way, their priority has to be finishing top four.
I mean, great for them to qualify. I don't think we had them going through when the draw was made.
No.
We were maybe 55-45, something like that, but Inter were the favourite. So now you're right. They have to refocus on the league, and especially that away from, even though Black yesterday after the game was like, we don't understand even ourselves why we are so bad away from home this season in the league, certainly. But also, to be fair, be in Europe. So that has to be the refocus. Keeping key players fit, of course, it's obvious. But yeah, rediscovering some sort of waveform, because it's not sustainable. I don't think they can finish top four if they continue on this terrible run that they have away from home.
The weird thing is, I heard somebody talking about this on a podcast, they're, obviously their home record is tremendous and their away record is
in the
poor.
League, it's incredible.
But if you dig into the analytics, their performances haven't... Obviously, they're better at home, but they're not massively dissimilar.
Mm.
So I don't think it's anything you want to take for granted, just, you know, trust in the mystique of the Metropolitano. All right, Jules, enough Atleti. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Arsenal need penalties to get past Porto. Jules, they're going to advance to the quarterfinals, but what are your thoughts on this, other than the fact that Pepe is immense and that I'm sure Arteta's very happy that he won't be seeing Porto again for a long time?
Yeah, I mean, Pep is fantastic at 41 years old. It's incredible. I really hope this is not his last Champions League game. I don't know if he's going to stick around for another season, but amazing. I think I like Arsenal's mentality in a way to go through. It was not easy. Porto are a good team. I think better than what people thought when the draw was made. They're hard to play against. Because of Conceição, because of the physicality they have, the way they set up, everything.
Because of the intelligence, I think, they have, like, tactically over the 120 minutes.
Yeah, it's...
I don't want to say Arteta was out-coached, but Conceição found all the schemes to diminish Arsenal as much as he could.
Yeah, completely, like they did in the first leg even more. Amazing goal by Trossard, made by the genius of Odegaard. And then after that, it's about keeping your nerves, not making mistakes, trying if you can get a second goal. If not... You go to penalties, and David Raya was the hero, which is good for him, I think, with all the discussion about goalkeepers, you know? And 14 years since they've been waiting to go back to the quarterfinals of the Champions League. So now they are, and it's a really good thing for them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think this game would have been far from following the trend of the of the Atleti game where afterwards we all go and praise. We would have prayed Sergio Conceição if the penalties had been better. But big shout out to Odegaard as well.
Definitely. And there was postscript to this game, Gab, as Sergio Conceição was furious with something Mikel Arteta allegedly said to him, but was later denied. And is it weird to you that he seems to lose it when playing English clubs? Because he had a fight with Tuchel, one with Pep.
Yeah, it's Tuchel when he was at Chelsea, obviously, and Pep at City. It's weird. Everything about this is weird. Everything from the fact that the expression that, now, this is according to media reports. I'd love it if Conceição came out and was pretty specific, so then we could judge. But he said, used an expression, which I'm not 100% sure I can say in Spanish, but translating to English, it's innocuous. It means your mother's shell, which obviously refers to your mother's private part. Now, this is not Arteta, unless I'm mistaken, is Basque. He's from Spain. Right? He's not South American. This is not a Spanish expression. It's something you really only hear in Latin American Spanish, specifically South American Spanish. So it would be really weird that Arteta had used this expression. Others, LME messaged me and said, oh, look, but, you know, it's like saying, hey, how you doing? Like, you know, and would you say your mother's vagina as a way, as a form of greeting? Maybe they do. Maybe LME does. Maybe it's normal in South America. I don't know. But he says it's not a big deal. Sergio Conceição, having played with so many Argentines and Uruguayans in his career, at Lazio and at Inter, you would assume he would know that. So this whole story to me seems really weird.
Yeah.
Arsenal, I think, have denied it. I don't know, on the record, off the
record, really
whatever.
Yeah, I didn't really follow that much, but
it's just move on. It's a weird way to end things when Conceição should be proud of, the way Oporto played. Borussia Dortmund are through as well, beating PSV Eindhoven and our buddy Peter Bosch 2-0. But Jules, this was way close until the end. And if the artist you once called Bad de Jong, I'd put it away.
Bad de Jong, for all the times I've called him Bad de Jong, he proved me right with that terrible chance that he missed. Terrible finish that was. PSV the better team in the second half when Chucky Lozano came on. I don't know why he didn't start, to be fair. Peter Bosch going a bit non-Peter Bosch there in his starting lineup. And we said this Dortmund team, it's not that they're not very good. They're just so inconsistent. They're capable of good things in the same game and then to kind of collapse and stuff. And that's what happened. And I felt a bit for PSV. Who've only two defeats the whole season is one away at Arsenal in the group stages and then this one away at Dortmund.
Yeah, but at least at Arsenal, they got spanked.
Yeah,
it was only
true,
4-0.
True.
This one,
time, they can have a lot of regrets.
Peter Bosch's head is going to explode when he looks back and says, we lost to this bunch of jokers playing like that?
That's very true. Michael Edwards is back at Liverpool. Gab, how big is this news?
I think it's really big. Look, I don't necessarily believe in like the holy man, genius, messiah thing. I think we over-egg that. I think there's a team and a system behind it. But then again, this guy was there for 10 years. He built this very successful side that Klopp then took to win significant things in very difficult times because up against a Man City that, you know, has all the resources and a tremendous manager and tremendous organization as well. So he took his time off. He decided to come back. We understand that it's with expanded football powers. I think that really matters in terms of continuity because obviously Klopp's leaving. Mm-hmm. I don't think Salah and Van Dijk, we don't know, but I don't know that they're going to be here, you know, at most maybe another year after this one.
Yeah,
after then, that, who knows? So I think you need to maintain that thread. FSG not involved in the same way that they were before when Mike Gordon was here. So he really is that link, and I think it's really important to have that.
Yeah.
Barcelona beat Napoli 3-1 to go through. Napoli's slow self-destruction began with that email Aurelio De Laurentiis sent to Luciano Spalletti back in April. I have a story up on that on the website.
Yeah.
But this is not something to take for granted. I was impressed with Barca. Fermín López, come on.
Paolo Cubarsí was incredible.
Cubarsí. From now on, it's Cubarsí.
Cubarsí, if you like want that. To. Yeah, I mean, 17 years old. He just turned 17 in January, so it's not even like if he was close to 18. Never played before in the Champions League game, ever. Not even group stage last
Not even on the
minutes.
PlayStation.
Nothing. Facing Victor Osimhen, one of the best strikers in Europe, and doing so well. Man of the match performance, of course. Incredible. And yeah, they can't, I think, consistently play well for 90 minutes. This is a fact. I don't think they can, but this was one of the best performances, certainly in patches, that we've seen in a very long time. Xavi was well pumped after, and rightly so, and he said, you know, you call us clowns, who's laughing now, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But he also said that this was not going to make him rethink leaving at the end of the season, and that he seems pretty convinced that, no, nothing's going to change, nothing has changed, I'm still leaving. But that was really good.
No, and I think Barcelona fully deserving to go through over the two legs. I do want to point out, though, that, and this is why some of these ties were so good, could have been a very different story with if Osimhen had been awarded that penalty. Or
do you think it's a penalty? I mean, there's Conte, but it doesn't
I think it's 50-50, and I think the Lindstrom header as well. Because the third goal only really came at the end of garbage time.
That's for sure. Gab, Juventus fans were all supporting Barcelona in this game. I think you can tell us why.
So, because this means Juventus have qualified for the FIFA Club World Cup, which means more money. There's a system. It's not that complicated. It's complicated and boring to explain. If you're bothered by it, go and Google. You will see why Juventus will be joining Inter in the FIFA Club World Cup and Manchester City
in
as well.
25, yeah.
Maybe Arsenal too if they win the Champions League. Oh, and by the way, this makes De Laurentiis unhappy because of his ban last season. So De Laurentiis is suing or has said he's going to sue. He hasn't sued yet. Jules, Maurizio Sarri has resigned as coach of Lazio. Are you surprised?
I'm not surprised, Gab. They lost on Monday night against Udinese in another horrid performance, to be fair to them, in the league certainly. I know in Europe they made it to the last 16. They beat Bayern in that first leg. It was not enough. But overall, they've been so poor this season in Serie A. So, not surprised. I think he could even have gone earlier, resigning or being sacked.
I'm surprised he didn't wait around to get sacked. I think it speaks well of him that he resigned. His assistant, Martuscelli, will take over. A lot of his staff are kind of saying, we don't really want to stay. But so, yeah, it remains to be seen if they're going to stay. And by the way, how did De Laurentiis, with his infinite class, comment this? He said, if you resign, you're a loser.
Right, okay. Thank you, Aurelio. And for De Laurentiis reference in a row now, Gabby, he's been investigated by UEFA for shoving a cameraman and interrupting a pregame interview.
This is, I'm sorry, we've got full De Laurentiis to show, but we have no choice. Basically, Sky Italia pregame, the rights holders, the guys that the colleague of mine is interviewing, Politano, and De Laurentiis comes by and says, pulls Politano away and says, don't talk to him. Don't talk to him because he's a Lazio fan, referring to the guy interviewing him.
Yeah.
And then he complained. He said, I told the club I don't want him interviewing him. I wanted somebody else. And then he shoves a cameraman for filming him. This is just...
This is
bizarro behavior. Paris Saint-Germain are through to the semifinals of the French Cup with a 3-1 win over Nice as tough times continue for my man Fradioli. Jules, they'll face Rennes while our buddy John Texter has qualified Lyon and they're going to take on Valenciennes, their favorites, of course.
Yeah, for League 2.
Oh, and that Mbappe fella got the start.
Yeah, and scored after 15 minutes, guy. Very good performance from PSG, I have to say. Very assured. Beraldo scored again, continuing his very good start at PSG since moving from Brazil in January. Really good day in the semi-final, quarter-finals of the Champions League, way ahead in the leagues. Really good for Luis Enrique so far. Gab, video emerged of Vinicius Jr. being racially abused by Atletico fans outside the Civitas Metropolitano ahead of that Inter game on Wednesday night again. What do you expect to happen now?
So, because I'm an optimist, I expect not to happen what happened last time. We're saying, well, it didn't happen very long, and we couldn't really identify anybody. You know, I can help you identify people. I've seen the video. You can see this one dude very, very clearly. He's this, like, preppy-looking loser with his white collar and stuff. And, you know, he calls Vinicius Jr. a chimp. You cannot do that.
No.
It's simple as. And by the way, this idea inside the stadium, outside the stadium, just make a rule. The stadium forecourt, I don't know if, I'm pretty sure actually the Metropolitano owns it. You're responsible for what happens there. That's it. It's not that difficult. This was way back on Monday, but Chelsea beat Newcastle 3-2 as Cole Palmer put on a masterclass. I was there to enjoy it, Jules. But Chelsea are still in the bottom half of the table. But Cole Palmer can play.
Yeah, I mean,
he's good. He's very good.
Yeah, the assist for Nico Jackson is not really nice. It's a shot that Nico Jackson quite cleverly slightly deflects with the back heel, but then after that, every touch, I just love every touch. He's so elegant and sometimes nonchalant at the same time, but still so precise technically. I love it. Gareth Southgate and you and Adam Sandler were all there to see it. Gab, well done to him. He's one of the rare positives of the season.
We were all sitting together, in fact.
Yeah. Milan headquarters were raided by Italian law enforcement on Tuesday, Gab. The suspicion is that Redbird don't really own the club. What's this about?
So this is a certain odd story. It basically has to do with the fact that when Redbird, who of course are looking to buy the Daily Telegraph newspaper and, you know, are involved with a bunch of different entities, when they bought the club for $1.2 billion, they didn't have all the money, so they borrowed money from Elliott, the previous owners. and effectively the Ivan Gazidis, who was the chief executive at the time, and the current chief executive, Giorgio Furlani, had to sign off on it. And so they're being held responsible. But I don't think it's a secret that this vendor loan was taken out. Everybody knew it. Mm. Everybody said it. So I think this is all going to go away very quickly. Bournemouth come from 3 goals down at home to beat Luton Town 4-3. Football, eh?
Incredible, Gab. I mean, I never thought I would see Luton scoring 3 goals like that in the first half away at Bournemouth. And even if I thought, okay, Bournemouth are going to play better in the second half, I never thought that they could come back like that. I think I looked it up. It's only the 11th time in Premier League history that a team 3-0 down wins, but only the third time where you're 3-0 down at half-time and still manage to win, at home or away from home. Incredible. Well done to Bournemouth. For Luton, I'm just not sure how you recover from this, because you would have thought, okay, this is great position. If had they won yesterday, they
it's
would have
been... It's a head-to-head.
Yeah, and they would have been level with Forest as well, who they play this weekend at home. So massive, massive game, even maybe bigger than the one at Bournemouth. I don't know, but I just hope for them they can psychologically recover more than anything else, because losing like that must be really, really hurtful.
And look, I know Bournemouth aren't safe, and I think we know people at the club would be very angry at us if we said they were safe. But realistically, you know, 3-0 down at home, it's cold, live to fight another day, right?
Yeah.
Like getting that reaction, finding it to go and win the game, I don't think that's something that should be underestimated.
No, I agree. I agree with you completely. Back to Chelsea, Gabby. The Athletic's David Ornstein said that they have picked up Bernardo Cuevas for next season. He's the set-piece coach for Mexico and for Brentford. Is it a sign of the times that we're talking about this?
Yeah, when do we ever talk? When did we ever talk about set-piece coaches?
Nicolas Jovert. We had a bit of the French, wizard at Arsenal.
Okay, let's go to the original wizard, which is the guy who invented set-piece coaching, which, of course, is Gianni Vio, who's also a former Brentford set-piece coach. No, it's interesting. I think that the strategy of Chelsea is like, ooh, what clubs do we want to be like? Oh, the clubs who are getting the most bang for buck and who are excelling. And so who do we raid? We raid Brighton and we raid Brentford. For their players a little bit, but then we find out it's Cucurella, so whatever. So, hey, let's go and get their smart people or the guys there who we think are smart and get them to run
staff,
our club. Oh, little point, just reminding me of Cucurella. All right, I'm not one of those people who cares what footballers wear. People are like, oh, look, you're wearing a snood. Oh, look, Arjen Robben and his tights and gloves and whatever. However, I noticed 3 of the 4, it was not cold at all on Monday
Maybe
night.
Maybe not for you.
No. 3 of the 4 Chelsea defenders were wearing gloves, okay? So of the four, one of them is Cucurella, who, all right, whatever, he's lived here for, 4 years? Maybe he hasn't percolated. But the other two, Axel Di Sassi, where's he from?
Paris born and bred.
Paris born and bred. Yep. It's freaking cold in winter in Paris.
Yeah.
You should be used to it. Maybe you should be tougher boy.
Stylish than anything else. Maybe it's not for the cool.
Oh, yes. I get my style advice from Di Sassi. And Chalaba? That's even worse. You're English. You grew up in the macho world of English football where people probably make fun of you if you wear gloves. I mean, seriously? He's a Chelsea youth team player. He saw like John Terry playing in a blizzard with his underwear and short sleeves.
True.
This is what he grew up with.
That's true.
Man, I was surprised. But whatever. Hey, wear what you like. I don't care. Rafa Benitez has been sacked as manager of Celta, Jules. I get that they're in danger of relegation. He's been poor. But this can't be the reaction to a 4-0 Real Madrid defeat. What do they expect?
No, you're right. Because as we said, they conceded late goals in that game. They were outplayed, but not that much. Maybe they had chances. De La Torre could have scored. I think this was coming, though. So
they did the thing where, like, oh, let's not sack them before we play the good team in the game. We're definitely going to lose, so the new guy doesn't get off on the bad foot.
Yeah,
right? Is that the thinking?
Yeah, it sounds like that as well. I've been super disappointed by Rafa. I have to be honest. I think they have a good squad that is better than where they are in the league. More Chelsea again. Todd Boehly met Michele Menalo, who is not just Chelsea's former technical director, but the director of football of the Saudi League. Gab, your thought, is it just like to have a coffee and chat, or is it there's more to it?
My thoughts is everybody's running, oh, look, they're going to balance the book by selling anybody who thinks they can to the Saudi Pro League. We, and I say we as in us in the media, we need to we need to do some Googling. We need to educate ourselves. We need to slow down on this nonsense already, okay? So, all right. Other than the fact Michael Emanuela worked at Chelsea for much longer than Boldy's been there and maybe just wanted to go back. I don't know. Obviously, they would have talked football. But this idea that, oh, look, here come the Saudis and their money. Oh, let's sell them a bunch of duds, right? They're not stupid. First of all, there's only four teams that are PIF teams, right? The other ones don't actually have that much money. I mean, we've seen it.
But they know that. They sold Koulibaly and Mendy to them already.
So yeah, well, that was another thing. They already know them. They've already sold these guys there. Secondly, it's not like you have to convince Emanalo. It's not like Emanalo, who's the director of football for the whole league. No, you have to convince the agents have to go.
Yeah, all the
players.
Convince
the clubs, convince the players to go. So, yeah, I think it's a courtesy thing from Boldy, but I don't expect a massive Chelsea exodus to Saudi this summer. Edison will miss up to 4 weeks getting himself injured against Liverpool at the weekend. Jules, a big deal?
I think it is. It's going to be tight for him to make the Arsenal game, which is 31st of March, so in like just less than
definitely
2 weeks.
Out for the Newcastle game in the magic of the cup on
in
Saturday.
The magic of the cup that you love so much. We said that Stefan Ortega is a good goalkeeper. He is not as good as Edison, for sure.
You said.
He's a good goalkeeper. Yeah, it is a blow. Also, Kevin De Bruyne has been called up by Belgium, but he's not going, supposedly, I guess, because maybe he doesn't really fancy the two friendlies, or just he's not fully fit, which is also a possibility.
By the way, if he's been called up and he's not going, unless the rules have changed, it means he can't play against Newcastle. No, if Belgium want to be mean about this. Okay.
Unless he's not in the squad, so he hasn't been called up. My bad. I thought he'd been called up and they'd said no. Right. He hasn't been called up by Tedesco, probably because he's not fit. So let's see if he plays this weekend or not. The Daily Mail reports that several Manchester United players are unhappy that Rasmus Højlund gave an interview to a popular YouTube fan channel, which they say routinely criticizes them. So they're not Holland, but the YouTuber.
Yeah, so basically this is a story the Daily Mail picked up from United We Stand, which is a really, really big and long-established Manchester United fanzine. And they're reporting that, so this channel, the guy who runs the channel is a guy named Mark Goldbridge, who's a very, very successful YouTuber. He's actually a former cop. And Mark Goldbridge isn't his real name.
He's Italian as well, isn't it?
It's an Italian last name. Yeah, I do wonder, like, if you're going to come up with a name, like, seriously, Goldbridge? That sounds really lame. But whatever. but he's really, he's an enormous following. So clearly a lot of people are into it. And according to this fanzine, which is a pretty reliable in what they report generally, some United players, they got angry with Højlund, that Højlund agreed to go on there, because the reason Højlund agreed to go on is because he's a Manchester United fan, and you know he's quite
young.
Probably
likes the guy, yeah.
Well, he was watching it back when he was a fan, and he was a nobody, right? I refuse to think that the United players are having a go at Højlund for saying, "Oh, don't go talk to this guy because he criticizes us." The guy is obviously a United fan, doing a job, whether you consider what he does as journalism or not, or simply being a fan, criticizing the players when you think it warrants it is part of being a fan. You're a Paris Saint-Germain fan.
Yeah, yeah.
You have no problem criticizing Paris Saint-Germain when they play badly, and you often do.
Yeah.
So I think I don't know if there's some miscommunication here, but the upshot of this is some vermin on the internet have apparently issued death threats against Mark Goldbridge and his staff.
What for?
This is the part which isn't super clear to me, in the sense that presumably they already knew that Mark Goldbridge existed.
Yeah.
So why not you criticize you threaten him now that he has Rasmus Højlund on, but you didn't threaten him before because he was criticizing players?
Yeah,
I don't get that part.
It's a bit
but
weird.
It's ugly. Hey, it's the internet.
What's strange is that in a club, especially at United, they control the communication of their own players so much. There's maybe not as many interviews done by the squad than
well, but the club authorized the interview.
Yeah, which is still strange, because the club could have said, listen, we know that this Mark Goldbridge at times could be a bit critical towards the team, the players. You know, maybe they could have warned him. Maybe they could have said, maybe don't do it now that you're injured. Maybe later at the end of this. I don't know. In pre-season, stuff like that. I'm always quite amazed when this kind of explodes like this, where you could have easily avoided it or make it just happen in a different way. That's all.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a comms expert, clearly. I do think you'd actually want to celebrate and tell the story if I'm United.
Yeah.
Hey, this guy was a United fan years ago. He was watching Goldbridge when he was a kid. I don't know how long Goldbridge has been on. But it's been a while, right?
I see your point.
Therefore, this is how he connects to the fans. Yeah. Because we may not like everything they do, but the guy's got, I think, 1.5 million followers or however many. So celebrate this.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what the club are trying to do. Whether if you're a United player and you're unhappy, then you've got problems. Ah, the magic of the DFB Pokal. Saarbrücken, who had already knocked out Bayern München, upset Borussia Mönchengladbach to advance to the semifinals, where they'll take on Kaiserslautern. Bayer Leverkusen face Fortuna Düsseldorf in the other semi. See, I went out Derek Gray there.
You went great in character.
Doing my best. George, this is good.
Incredible. Incredible. They also beat Frankfurt. Saarbrücken on their way. They usually score late goals. And they did it again against Gladbach. It was incredible. I mean, that goal, the atmosphere, I mean, the pitch is pouring down with rain. The pitch is mud everywhere. And they still managed to, obviously, they kind of half French, right? Because it's on the border.
It's right on the border. Right on the border. Just across the border, across the river is French.
Yeah, exactly. So we take them almost as French too. A wonderful, wonderful story. And now you look at it, and of course, anything is possible. Kaiserslautern also... you know, not in the Bundesliga. So Leverkusen is the only team left from the Bundesliga. They must be a heavy favorite to win it.
And three out of four lower division teams.
Yeah, and win the double because they're going to win the league as well. Maybe even the treble with the Europa League. So great opportunity for Xabi Alonso.
You know, it's funny when this happens. This ties back what you said before about boring, right? So you've got people who complain that, oh, it's always the same teams that go deep in the competition, right? But then, when you have other teams who go deep in the competition, remember, was it the FA Cup final here years ago when it was like Millwall against Cardiff? Maybe not Cardiff, but against a mid to lower table Premier League team. I forget what it was at the time. And people complained, oh, but, you know, it's not Liverpool, Man United. Like, what do you want?
I know.
What do you want?
I know.
You want the big teams, but then you want the fairy tales. These are fairy tales. Enjoy them. Kaiserslautern, by the way, they're close to getting relegated into the third tier, incidentally.
Still no deal between the Premier League and the English Football League, Gab, as 10 clubs voted against a proposal of a founding package of some £900 million. So from Premier League clubs to the lower league clubs.
There's going
to
be some owners or part owners of Premier League clubs, like, say... All right, John Textor, I'll put words in your mouth, who might say, hey, look, why do we have to pay for these guys? These guys
again,
are our competitors.
To me, because in France, Ligue 1 doesn't pay for Ligue 2 or National or National 2, National 3.
That's a fair point. In Italy, they do. In Germany, they do. First and second Bundesliga. But I think the issue here is, A, if you're a smaller Premier League club, these clubs in the championship are your competitors who you'll face when you get relegated, right?
Yeah.
So you imagine Burnley saying, like, guys, I got to give you guys money so that next year you'll be stronger when I pay against you. What's up with that?
Yeah.
So I think that's part of it. Now, of course, to be fair, the relegated clubs also get parachute payments, but that's another issue. In a purely business sense, you could say, oh, you're another league. Why do I need to worry for you? Of course, there's a pyramid and the strength of the pyramid and all this other jazz. So they have to work out some kind of deal. They need to get 14 votes. I think one of the sticking points, if I'm the Premier League, that I would really emphasize, I know some clubs have been emphasizing this, is saying, like, sorry, lower division clubs, we will give you money, but you have to have your financial house in order. You cannot, we're not going to go and fund some owner to go and spend our money on wages and then he bankrupts the team or comes close to doing it, right? Because that's the allegation. And so that means more oversight, which some people think could discourage some investments. If you look at the Football League, how many owners have spent enormous amounts of money and they've made enormous losses, right? And we have an example just now, which I'll bring up, because obviously producer Freddie is a big Reading fan, as well as Union Berlin. He sure knows how to pick them, by the way.
He's really sad.
The latest news is that at Reading, where there have been fan protests forever against the owner, originally used to be a brother and sister, Dai Young, and his sister Young, I think. Julie Young, whatever. She's out of the picture now. But they're in such dire financial straits that, you know, they've agreed a deal to go and sell the training ground as well. They don't own the stadium. The what used to be called the Medeski Stadium. I have no idea if it's still called the Medeski Stadium.
Select car leasing stadium.
The Select Car Leasing Stadium. Medeski, of course, the former Reading owner who named the stadium after himself, as you do.
I would do that. The Lawrence
Stadium. Exactly. Do they have a Texter? John Texter Stadium?
Oh, my God.
Stadium,
I'm sure it's coming up.
But, you know, we can joke about this, but there's a lot of fans that really, really care about this. And this is why, like, this is why it drives me mad when people rail against, like, oh, financial fair play and against financial oversight. No, we need to have this oversight. We need to have transparency. Because I don't trust these people, these owners, to go and run the clubs, to be good stewards of the clubs. And the people who suffer in the end when the owner leaves. And by the way, nobody becomes poor owning a football club. Funny enough, no matter how often they bankrupt the clubs, no matter how often they go bankrupt, they all seem to have money to go and spend elsewhere, right? You have to look after it. And if there had been rules in place to look after Reading, maybe they wouldn't be in the situation right now.
Yeah, that's true.
The Times reporting today that Brighton, who faced Roma in a few hours in the Europa League, fear that Roberto De Zerbi is disgruntled and may leave in the summer. Jules, are Brighton right to be concerned?
I think so. We saw him after the Roma first leg criticising quite heavily the ownership. And Tony Bloom, like I've never seen him doing before, or not many people for this matter before. He's moaned before about the fact that he had young players and it's not easy with young players. You have a lot to teach them. There's injuries. That the fact that they're not doing as well as they did last season, of course, but it was always going to be difficult to follow last season, adding Europe this year. So I can understand why. And also, I think he knows that if you look at the summer, if you're a manager and a successful one, highly rated one, that a lot of top clubs are going to look for a manager. Okay, Liverpool and Barcelona, maybe the two highest clubs, Bayern Munich as well, Napoli potentially, maybe even Juve, maybe even Milan. And suddenly there will be a lot of doors potentially opening for you. So I think if I was Brighton, I'd be really worried,
I have 2 points to make here. First, when you see a headline in a newspaper which says Brighton are worried, blah, 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 I think I'm not lifting a lid. I don't know for sure, but I'd be very surprised if this didn't come directly from the club. And then you can read into it, is it Brighton preparing themselves for the eventuality? But it's clearly Brighton that have put the story out, right?
Yeah.
It's not that Zerbi saying, oh, look, they're worried, I'm going to leave, right? Secondly, to Roberto De Zerbi, who I think is a phenomenal coach and who I really like as a person, I'm sorry, I got to put the boot in now. You knew what this club's model was. You knew how they operate. You knew this going in. I'm going to say to him the same thing I said to Jose Mourinho, right? You knew what restrictions they have. Okay, so January comes around and they don't go and strengthen the squad or whatever, then you have injuries and now you're short on players. Fine. But you knew that this was going to happen. He didn't say, oh, look, we're going to turn into Newcastle or Manchester City overnight and strengthen the squad in January because we're determined to win the Europa League because we're ambitious. No, you knew this.
Yeah.
You knew this and you were okay with it. You can't come out. If you want to come out and say, hey, we don't have the experience in Europe, fair. We don't have a very big squad. Plus, we've had a bunch of injuries. You know, Hinshelwood, Mitoma, Solly March, whatever. Fine. But you can't in any way send the message, I think, that the club should have spent money in January.
Yeah, no,
they didn't. They didn't, and you knew that this is their model. And you knew that this is their reality. And they did, by the way. They got Ansu freaking Fati. I wonder who signed off on that one.
Yeah. Austria coach Ralf Rangnick has declined to call up 3 Rapid Vienna players, Gab, and he told us exactly why.
Yeah, what do you think about Ralf Rangnick as a coach, as a person? I know there's Cristiano Ronaldo, not a fan of Ralf Rangnick. I think as a human being, you can only say he's a very principled guy. So these 3 players are along with 2 staff members. They play for Rapid Vienna. And when they beat Austria Vienna in the derby, and by the way, that's it's a highly underrated derby.
It is.
They sang a song which has to do because Austria Vienna's kit is purple. Purple they associate with, I suppose, being effeminate or being gay or whatever, and they sang a song which speaks of gay Austria Vienna. Essentially, it's a homophobic song which the club have been trying to stamp out, but which, you know, many of the fans sing, right? And he's saying, well, you're a club official, right? You're employed by the club.
Yeah, you represent
the club. You can't do this in public. because this is a song. Essentially, you're not mocking them because they wear purple jerseys. You're mocking them saying, ha, 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 look at you, you're gay, yeah. right? That creates a homophobic, hostile environment to anybody who may be gay in and around the club. And this is, it's 2024. This is not acceptable. It's not in line with the Austrian FA's values. It's not in line, I'm sure, with Ralf Rangnick's values.
For sure.
So you can't go. So it's good to have somebody to have the guts to go and take the stance.
Yeah.
Inter Miami roll past Nashville in the CONCACAF Champions Cup as Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez once again get on the score sheet.
Yeah, back in the team. We mentioned they
went. It's amazing. Those guys are in, they win. Those guys are out, they lose.
They went out there against Montreal at the weekend in MLS and they lost. Now they're back and they win. They are still so good. I mean, Luis Suarez scored late, remember, in the first leg to make it 2-2. He scored again this time. I mean, I don't know. It's too early to say if that will be the story. I don't know if Messi and Suarez can play every single game, every single minute of every single game this season in all the competitions.
They don't need them. They've got Taylor. They've got Campana.
Exactly. Yeah. So the story might be already. We know it for Inter Miami. When they're there, it's all great. When they're not, the struggle is real.
Do you think? I wonder. I have no idea. Luis Suarez. Messi's obviously never won the Libertadores. Luis Suarez, I'm pretty sure hasn't either. But how cool would it be if they actually won the Champions Cup, having won the Champions League, and then next year they say, all right,
let's all go to
Danubio
or somewhere, to Rosario. The Bundesliga have released video of referee Daniel Schlager wearing a body cam in the Frankfurt-Wolfsburg game a few weeks ago. Gab, I know you love things like that. Did you like it? Did you learn anything?
So they did this, I think, in the context. I mean, they think they put a body cam on him, and then I think they carefully went through everything to make sure everything was kosher. And they did this in a context of, you know, referee mic'd up, watch the game from the ref perspective. I think it's kind of cool as a one-off to see the game from the referee's perspective, to see how quickly they have to make decisions and whatever else. In that, as a little gimmick, like, you know, we've seen those like mic'd up segments, they have them in different sports, that's fine. As a way of policing, gathering evidence, I don't think it's the right thing, because I don't want, I think this that does cross a line in terms of infringing on the referees. I want the referee to be able to say, oh,
freely,
this guy.
You mean?
Yeah, I want the referee to be able to speak freely, and I also want the referee to be able to say, oh, you know, this player used inappropriate language or whatever, that's why I sent them off. And it's like, oh, but it's not in the body cam audio. Like, you know, I don't want us to get into that situation, right? No, I mean, this is not real world policing. This is a sport.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Al Hilal 2-0 victory over Al Ittihad means they have won 28 consecutive games in a row in all competitions, and that breaks the world record. Are you impressed?
I am impressed, Gab, and they've been great in the Saudi League. This was in the Asian Champions League, of course. They qualified for the semi-final now. They were by far the better team over the two legs. And
it's Karim Benzema's fault.
He was not involved in that game either.
So that's why it's his fault.
Exactly, that's why. So well done, really, to Al Hilal. They've got certainly the star players.
Is this a meaningful record? And the reason I'm asking you is... Do you know who held the record before them?
I know because you wrote it. To be fair...
No, tell me then. Yeah. Tell our audience.
Yeah, the New Saints from Wales, right?
Ah, it's a Welsh team, so it's a meaningful record.
No, but to be fair... No, it's not meaningful. I think it means something for them.
Right.
But then Al Hilal can't play in the Champions League in Europe, can't play in La Liga.
Of course.
You can only beat what is in front of you. Of course, if it was every week top club from Europe, there would not be 28 games in a row. But I think... where they are and in the competition that they are involved in, it's great. It's great for them. Are they one of the greatest team ever? No, they're not. But well done.
I completely agree. It depends on the context. Yeah. The people who held the record before the New Saints were Ajax in the early 70s when they won three consecutive European Cups. Yeah. So that was a legit, really good team facing really top opposition.
Yeah. MLS referees lockout continues, Gab, as games are being refereed by college and youth coaches. Gab, is this a concern? Surely, come on.
I don't want to get into the whole union thing because I don't know the ins and outs of how much they want to get paid, what it's worth, but I think it is a concern. I mean, if we're saying to referees, we value you. You need to go through these steps to get certified, and we can turn this into an actual career for you because we think having professional referees and well-trained referees is really important. You have to reach some kind of understanding. You can't just pretend, oh, then we're just going to continue with youth referees or college referees or random guys. Yeah. Because then you're saying, like, ah, it's not really important. Then you're really saying, oh, this is just about, you know, and some people have said this about MLS, it was just about making money. That's all it is, right? I think you lose a lot of credibility. Now, could it be that the MLS referees are all being greedy and insane and they're saying like, we want to get paid $500,000 a year and have 18 weeks holiday, whatever? I don't know. I haven't reported enough on the negotiations, but I do know that for MLS, which by the way, as you may have heard, is the league where Lionel Messi plays, and so therefore all these casual fans are supposed to be, if you go through the trouble bringing him in, you have to have adequate referees. Al Nassr are out of the Asian Champions League. This, despite a rousing comeback against Al Ain and my boy Hernan Crespo to take it to penalties, Jules. And do you like the way I've mentioned Al Nassr without mentioning their famous striker, Sadio Mane?
Sadio Mane.
Anderson Talisca, I think, was unavailable.
Yeah, that's true. On penalties, Cristiano can't have been happy, of course, that they get knocked out really early. Quarterfinals is not really the objective. I think they had the ambition to go all the way. Al Ain maybe not as starstruck as Al Nassr for sure, but collectively a really good team. I mean, Crespo, I think doing a really good job over there, to the point that you wonder if he will ever get a club in Europe showing interest. What's going to happen between him and Gallardo? Who do you think could come to Europe first? Now that he's both in the Gulf.
Look, I mean, Crespo's won in Argentina.
Yeah.
He's had goal rounds in Europe, but I'm biased because I really like the guy. You know, I've known him for a very long time. And he's a humble guy as well. And he's always willing to learn. He's always asking questions and stuff like that, which I think says a lot. And I can be, because, you know, a lot of managers, hey, look, I think about tactics in football all day. It's not really what I want to chit-chat about either. In this game, by the way, Cristiano, I don't think he played badly, but I think he had one of the absolute worst misses of his career, literally 2 yards
surely
out.
The worst.
And I think he absolutely hates that. I mean, he nearly won it for them, but you know, that's got to hurt. Look, just means it can happen to anyone.
Another blow for the European Super League, Gab. A European court ruled that there is already a Super League, and it's in Denmark.
Yeah, and it's funny. I mean, this is the problem with calling something Super League, right? If the Women's League in this country cared enough to hire a lawyer to take them to court, there's a Women's Super League here as well, right? I mean, calling yourself Super League, and this applies to the European Super League and to the Danish Super League, it's kind of really stupid and unimaginative, right? I mean, we're super. Like, it's something a child would come up with. Not very creative. Look, they've opened up a can of worms. I don't think this changes anything. Should it ever come to fruition, they'll just call themselves, I don't know, something else. Something more creative. The Mega League, the Euro League. You know, I mean, Euro League basketball works pretty well. You know, why don't they, whatever. But it is kind of funny. And I think, hey, you know, if you live by the lawyer, you die by the lawyer. Kylian Mbappe's lawyers have taken legal action on his behalf against the kebab shop. Say it ain't so, Jules. I saw this story online and I said, this must be some it was on our website. Oh, this must be some fool writing a sensationalist story just to be mean. Somebody who hates Mbappe and hates Paris Saint-Germain. I thought it was going to be one of our Spanish guys.
Yeah.
But no, it was you.
It was me, Gab. I mean, I still cannot really believe this story is true. I mean, I've seen the lawyer's letter, so it was sent to me. So it's definitely true. This guy, Moeni, who's an influencer in France, quite well known in the football world in France, who also opened recently a kebab shop, and he's got all those burgers and kebab sandwiches, whatever you want to call them. And one of them, the description is called a club kebab, and the description of it is that it's made with a round baker bread, as round as Kylian Mbappe's head.
Right.
There's Dimitri Payet also, because there's one that is like a crepe, like a sort of pancake, and is the description says as loaded as Dimitri Payet. So, you know, it's not only Mbappe, he's using that in the description.
Right.
Clearly without the consent of Kylian. So Kylian's lawyer, who's pretty tough, as we've said before, send a letter saying, if in the next 8 days you haven't removed Killian's name from all your menus and everything, then we're going to sue you and take you to court. And the guy could not believe that Mbappe is actually taking legal action against him for something so futile.
I'm going to be completely conspiratorial on this one. I mean, I'm not a lawyer. I'm not an expert on...
We know what you think of lawyers.
You know what I think of lawyers. Yeah. I don't think something like this, when you're using a description of a public figure, I don't believe this is grounds for trademark infringement. And I think they're going to lose if this actually goes to court. Is it possible?
That's a fair point.
But on the other hand, I'd never heard of Moen, the well-known French football influencer.
Yeah.
Moeni, whatever. Could this be some way to get some publicity for Moeni and his...
Well, he seems quite up for the
fight. At his kebab
shop? I'm not sure right. if you would take on
Kylian. Like, could he secretly be Mbappe's mate? And
oh, no, definitely okay. not. No, right. he's a Marseille fan. It's not.
Okay.
But, right. yeah, I don't know. I'm just, again...
You're just checking.
Not sure about the look for Mbappe. Gab, who is Wilfried Duala and why are we talking about him today?
Well, apparently Wilfried Duala does not exist. He is not a
he
real person.
Exist, yeah.
He is actually somebody else named Alexandre Bardelli.
Yeah.
Wilfried Duala was supposedly this 17-year-old kid who was called up to the African Cup of Nations by Cameroon. Except now, apparently, it's not who he says he is. He's really Alexandre Bardelli, who's actually 21, or at least 21. Could actually,
yeah,
Alexandre Bardelli might even
yeah.
be older. The Cameroon FA are doing an investigation. 62 players have been provisionally suspended. Now, we're used with players, you know, this has happened not just it's associated with Africa, but it's happened in South America. It's happened elsewhere, right, where people have submitted in Asia, in Europe until not that long ago, where people have had kind of dubious
yep.
birth certificates. But it was still them. It was still a real person, right?
Yeah.
They just maybe changed the birth date. Here, it just seems they asked this guy to take on a whole other identity, right?
Yeah.
And by the way, before we come out and I go like, ha, 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 it could only happen in Cameroon or whatever. Well, it happened in Europe. In fact, if you remember former Chievo star Heriberto, who was a 17-year-old phenom who played for Chievo and then was signed by Inter. And then afterwards, it was Chievo or Bologna, and whatever, played for both of them. Afterwards, we found out that, hey, actually, he's a 26-year-old guy named Luciano who was a professional footballer in Brazil. Now, what I don't follow is how could Bardelli just disappear? Didn't people wonder, like, hey, where did Alexandre go?
Presumably,
he's a professional footballer, right?
Yeah. And, I mean, he's got tattoos everywhere. He's got a scar on his eyebrow.
Is that yeah.
Eyebrow. So he's pretty recognizable, really. And that's how Le Monde, who I think are the first one to have brought this story, was saying, hang on. Back in 2022, we interviewed this group of promising players in Cameroon who wanted to make right. it to the top and to Europe, play for the national team. And there was this guy called Alexandre. A year later, we found him in the Cameroon squad for AFCON under another name, a different age than when we saw. But then the same tattoo, the same face, the same scar is definitely him. And that's what I find remarkable. Did the guy thought he would not get caught, not that no one would find out? And what I find him more, imagine if you've done that, Gab, okay? You would think that you would keep a low profile, right?
Yeah.
Don't put yourself too much in the limelight. What did this guy do at AFCON with Cameroon? He was the one carrying the speaker in front of the squad when the squad was arriving at, you know, in the dressing room of the stadium, for example, before a game.
Right.
He would be dancing on his own. Everybody would be filming. He would be all over social media, everywhere. And you know how they do in Africa. They dance all the time.
Yeah.
They sing. He was literally the leader for that. And you think, like, surely, keep a low profile. Don't make people notice you if you've got this kind of story behind you.
But also, he went and he didn't actually play. So I almost kind of feel, he didn't play a single minute. So I almost kind of feel like, well, what was the point of this whole thing?
Could you think it could be the Samuel Eto'o? Uncle Sam, like, because he's been quite quiet on
know.
The story.
So credit to the Cameroon FA. They're investigating.
Yeah.
Cameroon, I mean, the Reuters story I read said that, you know, they're in danger of being banned from the next Cup of Nations. As far as I know, if you knowingly falsify documents, and there's
yeah.
no suggestion, or you don't do enough checks.
Yes, that's it. It's
you can be banned internationally, too. I don't know if it's going to come to that. I think this is why they're taking very quick, proactive action on this one.
Yeah.
But what an odd story.
Incredible story.
Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Monday.
Because
it's FA Cup weekend, baby.
Your favorite.
My favorite. Hey, look. It's still Manchester United and Liverpool, right?
Yeah,
that's
of
still
course.
A big
exactly.
game, and it's still
massive.
City and Newcastle. So very I'll be watching. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.